Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning, Los Angeles, Orange County, the United States, if not the rest of the world. Good morning. Today's show, Laws of Cure, what you need to ask yourself. If you are symptomatic, if you are sick, if you are healthy, if you are radiantly healthy, there are perspectives in medicine, perspectives in healing, perspectives in cure, ways of approaching your health or your disease, however you want to view it, that make the difference between success and failure. Really, there is a philosophy to healing, a theology to healing. There's a methodology, but more than anything, there's a basis, and that basis is your attitude. Not to judge you, not to say you have to change your attitude, but really to say the critical thing for you, if you're interested in health, is to create the perspective, the right perspective on the journey. The right perspective on the journey. Healing is a journey. There's no two ways about that. All of us doctors know that the issue with the public is that they don't want to understand it as a journey. They want to understand it as a pit stop. Just one quick little stop on this unfortunate detour, and then you're back on the road, resuming all normal activities that got you sick in the first place. It doesn't work that way. That's the Western model. The Western holistic, the Western allopathic model. That's the Kaiser Permanente model. And we all say, yes, 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 we know. But if you really watch the public course through a healing, you see where they don't understand. So if you find yourself in this journey, understand you're in a journey. And you may see, really, from the day you had your symptom to the present, 2, 3, 5, 10 years ago, you may just be continually looking for that one stop, one doctor, one moment where you're going to see everything turn around and finally someone fix the problem. You must get off that misconception. That is delusion. That is myopia. That being said, what does that leave you? It leaves you a sheet of paper and a bunch of questions to ask yourself. And that's today's show. Because if you take all the people you ever knew, if any doctor took all the people they ever knew that actually cured something, I don't mean made their headache go away one day, and I don't mean improve their menstrual flow, and I don't mean help the symptom. I mean cured a disease. People do cure disease. Autoimmune disease, cancer disease, heart disease, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease. People do cure it. They don't cure it often. That's right. They don't cure it often, but we have always, if you check the literature, if you get around, if you work with sick people, you observe people across the board curing diseases that were not supposed to be cured. Now, that's in the literature. It's in personal testimony. And it's true, but it's not the usual course. So we have sporadic, isolated incidences of cure. No denying that. But if you took all those people in all the places in all the world and you took all of them and put them together in one group, it would all be the same for them all. Meaning it's a journey. Meaning they had to adopt an attitude that allowed them to sustain a journey, and this is the point where they adhered, explored, prospered from the laws of cure. So today's show is the laws of cure. Healing is about adhering to natural law. Natural law means if you do it, it works 100% of the time, not 50% of the time. That's the power of natural law. Now, how do you make that tangible? Well, you have to ask yourself questions. So you're going to have a sheet of paper today, and you're going to ask yourself a bunch of questions. You're also going to get to my website, straighttalk.cc, not .com. That's two T's, straighttalk.cc. And you're going to go to today's show, show 274. We have 274 hours from 5 years ago of a backlog of shows that you want to absorb, because they are about the laws of cure. Each show is a different perspective in cure. That's as opposed to each show is about what you do or what you take to cure. I never say this is what you do to cure. I say this is one of the things you do to feed your body so it integrates on its own the cure for you. These are very different things functionally. For as much as the public always says yes, they really, when you watch them work with it, they don't understand this deeply enough. Even the practitioners do not understand this deeply enough. So this is a politically incorrect show, because it asks you to grab more profoundly what's right there on the tip of your nose, but you don't want to see it. So show 274, the laws of cure, what you need to ask yourself. And the first thing you need to ask yourself, and you're going to see, you need an education to understand these questions. So my regular audience will, if you're new to the show, get on that website. First question, are you building garbage faster than you're taking it out? Now, I made that one very simple. What do you have? Do you have an autoimmune disease? Do you have joint pain? Do you have cancer? Do you have ulcerative colitis? Are you senile or going there quickly? Do you have Parkinson's? Do you have Alzheimer's on the way? What do you have? Well, I have a question for you, so write it down. Are you building up garbage faster than you're taking it out? Now, that's a simple question, and it's simply phrased. But we can get away from all the nonsense of higher science and all the aristocracy and futility of higher science, in the sense that no matter what and how you understand the disease, something's always building up that isn't being taken away. And if things build up faster than they're taken away, you've got big problems. Now, what does it mean then? How do we translate that? Well, first of all, taking away means your exits. Are your exits clogged? Exits meaning what? Is your skin working? And that does mean, are you sweating? Are you going to the bathroom and defecating 2 to 3 times a day? Does your bile flow? Does your lymph move? Do all the exits that take out the garbage that build up in the body moving out faster than it builds up? And have you had that experience? Do you have discourse with cleaning a kidney, cleaning a gallbladder, moving the lymph, creating a body that sweats profusely, easily, with minimal prompting? And if you've got that under your belt, that's an experience for you to write down, check off, and say, I think I'm reasonably effective at moving the garbage out faster than the garbage builds up. Now, we're going to go on like this. And instead of focusing on the disease, instead of focusing on the symptom, instead of scanning radio shows and YouTube clips for some herb that's going to solve your problem, you're going to understand that if you answer these questions, then what you're doing is adhering, prompting, initiating natural law, the natural laws of cure. This is how people do it. They don't do it the other ways. Yes, I suppose there are isolated miracles where somebody takes a certain supplement and their brain tumor goes away. I suppose there are people that get healed by hand. But I can tell you from being in the field, deeply involved in the field, by and large, these things don't happen. But if you put together all the people in the whole world in a decade that really took themselves out of deep disease, you would see what they all had in common. Now, that's my forte. That's where I study. That's where I study deeply. All right. Are you building garbage faster than you're taking it out? Question one. Question two. Have you accelerated your rate of precipitation? Precipitation. So get to the website and take a look at some of the pictures, because precipitation, it's a word you don't have relationship with. Picture one. There's a test tube with a bunch of crystals in it. Picture two, there is a test tube where you can see there's an active precipitation, meaning that the liquid was clear and colorless, and then out of that clear and colorless liquid came something that looked like snowflakes or a snowball or a cloud. Solid matter precipitating or forming or coagulating out of clear liquid. Solid matter precipitating or forming or coagulating out of clear liquid. Now get this, really get this. In the space between the cells, your body is always doing some form of this. In the space between the cells, your body is always doing some form of this. Are you precipitating rapidly? Or are you precipitating slowly? Were you precipitating rapidly? And now, did you transform yourself into a chemistry, into a body chemistry, where you're not precipitating at all? Now, let's put these two concepts together. Someone that's precipitating too quickly, making too much sediment, and somebody that's not removing that sediment fast enough. That's question one and two. Now, right there, if you're precipitating too quickly and you're not removing it fast enough, you're going to get sick. If you want to know where disease starts, it starts right there. Now, we can take your disease and we can bring it to the halls of science, and we can build upon, in the scientific method, all sorts of studies around that disease. But it simply comes down to, did it build up faster than it moved out? And the two variables about that, that control that, are how fast do you precipitate crystals and how easily do you remove them through the portals of excretion? Which is to say to you, symptomatic, sick, healthy, in desire of being healthier than you are, do the things to reduce precipitation and do the things to enhance excretion. That's pretty simple. We would barely need to go on. You'd barely need to ask yourself anything more. Could it be that it's that simple? Could it be that we've built an ivory chair society, that we've built tall towers to make the simple complex? Could it be that you've been misdirected? Could it be that the years you've looked for cure have simply been because the perspective was off? I ask you to think about that. I ask you to consider that what I'm saying is just common sense. Well, you say, what crystals? What crystals are we talking about? Picture number three. Urate. U-R-A-T-E, urate, is in soluble form in between your cells. Urate is in soluble form in between the cells. And if your chemistries are off, if you're not in a healthy state, then urate becomes uric acid. Well, that's actually calcium. Picture number three are calcium oxalate. So you can have oxalic acid. You can have that distributed in a liquid form in between the cells. And again, if the chemistry's off, that oxalate will become calcium oxalate, which is a kidney stone. Oh, kidney stone. You mean this is in the kidneys? No. You have calcium oxalate crystals all over the body, everywhere. You have them in tumors. Calcium oxalate will find its way into every space in the body if the chemical conditions precipitate it. It's the same thing about urate and uric acid crystals. So if you go to picture four, and that's what I was referring to a moment ago, those are uric acid crystals. They were once in liquid form. Calcium oxalate or kidney stones were once in liquid form. You have liquid forms becoming solid forms, and those solid forms are crystals, and those crystals have to deposit somewhere. You have calcium, and calcium, if you go to picture six, calcium hydroxyapatite and miscellaneous crystals. There's a little piece of wisdom I put on picture number seven. Bone calcification. The bone is being calcified in places that aren't bone. Bony material precipitates out of liquid all the time. And that bony material that precipitates out of liquid is what you call arthritis. That bony material that precipitates out of liquid is what you call calcified plaque on the inside of the arteries. That bony material that precipitates out of liquid is what you call senility. Read this. This is a fascinating little statement here. Go halfway down. No, go to the second line here. This is picture number seven, I believe, right? Yes, picture number seven. Now look at that. The initial calcium salts to be deposited are not hydroxyapatite crystals, but amorphous compounds. That's to mean liquid. These amorphous salts can be absorbed rapidly when there's need for extra calcium in the extracellular fluid. Now, that is normal physiology. So we all have this. And listen to that. Here's the guts of it. Precipitation of calcium in non-osseous, so non-bony tissues under abnormal conditions. There it is. This is what they should be checking out at Kaiser during your yearly physical. This is what you have to be tested for to see coming long before it comes. And this in the big picture, going back to the designation of the show, is an example of accelerated precipitation of crystals because of abnormal physiology. Here it is with respect to calcium hydroxyapatite. Precipitation of calcium in non-bony tissues under abnormal conditions. Abnormal pH is being one of them, but one of many. pH is just a reflection of what's wrong. Rather than changing the pH, get the body healthy so the pH changes. You see, you've got it a little backwards with pH. Precipitation of calcium in non-osseous tissues under abnormal conditions. They precipitate in arterial walls in a condition called arteriosclerosis. and cause the arteries to be bone-like tubules. That's what's going on everywhere in the body. It's not just your arteries, it's your joints. And if it's in the arteries, it's in the arteries of the brain. It's in the arteries of the eye. Glaucoma, retinopathies, senilities, cancers. Precipitation of calcium salts. Calcium salts frequently deposit in degenerating tissues. Degenerating tissues. That means aging. That means disease. That means symptomology. So you can talk about uric acid. You can talk about calcium hydroxyapatite. You can talk about calcium oxalate. You can talk about calcium phosphate. You can talk about a ton of precipitants. And these precipitants collectively represent what your body needs to be moving out and making less of. And those are the first two questions. Just explore it a little bit more. Now, what I'm saying to you is, this is the way you have to look at your health. You got to get off. You don't want to stay on the what herb do I take for the symptom, or what drug, or what surgery, or what quick fix. Because if you're talking cure, generally, there isn't a quick fix. There's a slow fix. There's a long-term fix. There's a fix that demands your education. And yes, yes, it's okay to do something short-term. Because if you're in pain, well, you've got an immediate issue, and that is to reduce your pain to a tolerable level. Well, we have a word for that. It's called acute medical care. What you do to get yourself to the chronic state is take care of the acute state. And taking care of the acute state, however you're going to take care of it, is a good idea. And if that's an herb, it's an herb. If it's a pharmaceutical drug, it's a pharmaceutical drug. But if you're talking cure, you're talking about this conversation. So two laws. Are you excreting it? And how fast are you making it? And are you making it faster than you're excreting it? Okay. So those are the first two things on your list. Now let's get to what controls all of this chemistry of precipitation. Let's get to the underlying causes of all the things we're about to consider. And guess where you are then? You're outside of the chemistry. So question number three, is your nervous system balanced? Explain to yourself, get a sense of the neurological system. You have to bring your nervous system to the cure, which is to say, while you're thinking about degenerating cells and tumors and autoimmune diseases, and all sorts of things that we can put our finger on and talk about biochemically. And then we can talk about all the things we're going to do, from cleanses to taking herbs to having surgeries to doing pharmaceutical drugs and so on and so forth to fix these chemical dysregulations. Really, underneath it all, you have to look outside of the chemistry to the electromagnetic field. And this, of course, is the autonomic nervous system. And if you go to picture eight and you look at the two divisions of the autonomic nerves, no news to my regular listeners, but somehow I don't think we can ever say this enough. If you are living in stress, and if you're saying, oh, no, not me, I'm sure you especially are living in stress. If your sympathetic nervous system is dominant, your cells will never receive the electromagnetic pulse that drives a healing. You cannot organize the chemicals in a cell to do what they're supposed to do to create the healing, to reduce the precipitation, to enhance the excretion. The nervous system has to be balanced. To do anything, the nervous system has to be balanced. There is no conversation in nutrition. There is no nutrition. There is no herbology. There is no detoxification. There is nothing if the nervous system is not balanced. And that's where things get very ethereal. And this makes very many people uncomfortable because we don't have great scientific models to understand this. We don't have technologies to determine whether or not the autonomic nervous system is balanced. We have weak Western science. We have weak technology. However, we do have a very, very strong empiricism. So the task of determining whether or not the nervous system is balanced was given traditionally to empiricists. These are people who observe the body. These are people who create systems to reproduce their results with astounding accuracy and reproducibility based on observation. And some of you have may already guessed what we're talking about. We're talking about Chinese medicine. We're talking about Ayurvedic medicine. We're talking about systems of medicine that said, based on what we observe, what we touch, what we feel, based upon what our senses tell us, you, Mr. Smith, can be assured that you're moving towards cure. Not measurements, not lab tests, not technologies, not pictures, but things that the senses can divine. That's what we call empiricism. Empirical systems support the fact that the senses can determine far more and far earlier than standardized diagnostic tests. But you see, we in the West, well, we're in love with our tools. We're in love with our technologies. And while that may be a good thing, it slows cure. Technology slows cure. Technology at the expense of empiricism is disrespectful to the soul. Technology at the expense of empiricism is atheistic. It is like saying there is no God. What's going on here? This guy, Medici, he's drawing a relationship between my CT scan at Kaiser and God. Yes, I am. I'm saying to you that you're putting faith in someone's version of reality based upon diagnostic Western scientific technology when it can't prove there's a God, and yet you swear by God. You swear on oath by God. You can't measure God. You can't find God in a scientific experiment. And yet, of course, you'll argue with that. All the people will argue that, regardless of what religion they're in, will argue with that. And yet those are the very same people who will deny empirical medicine. You have to consider that. You have to consider that there's a faulty line of thought there. And so this thing about the nervous system being balanced, this was codified in the historical emphasis on the word prana, chi, the flow of life in the body. And to make it even more precise, you have to be able, so put this on your checklist, you have to be able to, excuse me, take these concepts to where the rubber meets the road. Meaning when you go into any of the energetic therapies, massage therapy, banya therapy, lymphatic drainage, rolfing, qigong, tai chi, kung fu, yoga, acupuncture, you have to make sure you evolve your relationship with these energetic therapies to the point where you are sure, you are certain, you are having a visceral experience of the phenomenon. If you're doing yoga and you are not experiencing in a profound way a shift, then you have to question whether or not you're doing yoga. And it's the same for every modality I listed. So this relationship with electromagnetic aspects of health that scientists would call balancing the autonomic nerves has to be taken by you, the participant, to extreme levels, so you're certain you're having a visceral, three-dimensional experience of it, or it doesn't work. So, have you accelerated or decelerated your excretions? Have you accelerated or decelerated your precipitations? Do you have conversant experiential relationship with prana? Do you understand what it means in terms of the neuroendocrine system? And now I just brought in another word. I brought in endocrine. That means glandular. Glandular controlled by neurological. Neurological meaning autonomic. That endocrine system is your glandular system. Hypothalamus, pituitary, pineal, thyroid, thymus, adrenals, ovaries, testes, pancreas, pieces of the liver, so on and so forth. The glandular system, endocrine glands, ductless glands. Significance. The glands are your reserve system. The body uses the glandular system largely as a reserve bank in trauma. Under stress, any stress, you burn out the glands faster. If your neurological system is sympathetic dominant, your endocrine system dissolves and reduces and dries out and burns up faster. It's just common sense. It says abuse yourself, and by the time you're 30, you look 70. Imbalance in the neuroendocrine system is the fundamental problem you face at the topical level, meaning at your symptomatic level, at the root of it is imbalance in the neuroendocrine system. So when you talk about the adrenals, when you talk about thyroid, when you talk about ovaries, testes, sex drive, absence of sex drive is not about absence of sex drive. Absence of sex drive is about a sign that your body's burnt. The tank is on empty. And the next place that gets hit is the DNA of the cell. That's the way you understand absence of sex drive. But what we, of course, do is we understand it myopically. Okay. What herb do I take for my pH? What do I do about my kidney cleanse? How do I take care of my weak adrenals? So on and so forth. Rather than understanding conceptually how these things piece together. It's the higher learning you want. It's the fundamental learning that you want. And this is where we need to go. Because statistically, things are getting a little bit more complicated, and they're going to require a deeper gravity of attachment to concept, natural law. Put your faith in natural law. Put your money on natural law. So, are you precipitating and how fast? Are you excreting and how effectively? Are you balanced neurologically through the autonomics? And what effect on either side of the fence has it had on your reserve, your endocrine system? Fascinating. Look at picture. Look at picture 12. That's the fascial system. All that white gooey material, that's fascia. I never stop talking about fascia. Take a dried, dirty, filthy, greasy sponge. A filthy sponge. Take a sponge, put some water on it, and wipe the valve cover of your car engine. Lift the hood of your car and take a wet sponge and just clean your car engine until that sponge is black with grease. And then put that sponge in the sun on a hot summer afternoon and let that sponge dry out. That's you at 60. It is literally you at 60. Now take that sponge, hot, dried, dirty, filthy sponge, and put it in water. That water is where the fascia is. That water is where the fascia is in the human body, meaning it's everywhere. The fascia is the great communicator. The fascia greases all systems of the body. The fascia links every cell to every cell, every system to every system. And the fascia is the medium through which the electromagnetic field is transferred. That's big. That's not little. That's big. Go to picture 13. The fascia forms the largest system in the body, as it is in the systems that touch all the other systems. James Oshman. Look at that statement. That statement means develop relationship with your fascia. Add that to the list. Do you have experience with your fascial system? Meaning, do you know what it is to unravel the connective tissue of your body? Do you have relationship with that? Can you stretch a tendon to the point where the body begins to unwind? Unwinding. Now, as a term most people have never heard of. Unwinding. Have you been able to do something to your body to allow it to unwind like your cat does and your dog and nature in general all day long? Just in the natural sequence of animal life, is all of God's creatures unwinding. They unravel, they shake and shimmy and pull what will otherwise become the adhesions in the dirty, dried out sponge. Those adhesions will begin to corrupt the organ systems, corrupt the spaces in between the cells, and put the cells in an environment that will engender, it will initiate, that will compel the cell to begin to change its form to other phases. And that's what you call symptomology, disease, loss of function, death, necrosis, apoptosis, so on and so forth. It begins with adhesions, twistings, torques in the fascial system. Do you have relationship with that? Have you ever put yourself in a yoga class? Have you ever gotten on a massage table? Have you ever worked with your breath? Have you ever meditated? Have you ever taken yourself to the point where you cross the physiological line into an unwinding? Now, yes, I understand quite a few people don't have relationship with that word, but you should. I talk about it on my shows all the time. YouTube is loaded with it. And it's something we want to bring into the American mainstream, just as we've brought in Hershey bars and cell phones and iPhones. There's a whole language out there. I'm using those derivatives today. There's a whole language of natural law in regard to healing that is infallible. And this is what you have to ask yourself. If you have any relationship with real relationship, if you're not getting answers from the illnesses you have, it's because you're not doing this. You've bought into Madison Avenue cures. You've bought into myths, sensationalism, overpromises and underdeliverings. You've brought into the media, the marketing, the hype of either alternative medicine or allopathic medicine. Both sides of the fence do it, and they are both poor substitutes for natural law. So do you have relationship with your fascia? Are you patent in the biliary system? Picture 14. That liver of yours up there engineering 13, 14, 1,500 different chemical functions. That liver, the largest, densest organ in the body. Once its plumbing system is clogged, once the biliary system's congested, the consequences of that are massive. The overflow into the blood, and from the blood into the intercellular fluid, and from the intercellular fluid into the cell, and from into the cell into all the changes that will initiate as the cell drowns in its poison. It begins with congestion. It is always part of disease, a congested biliary system. This is where you go. You come in with a brain tumor. You come in with low back pain. You come in with lupus. You come in with colitis. You come in with digestive disorder. You come in with joint pain. On that list goes, does the bile flow? Now, what we're building is a model that you can utilize to create freedom from disease. But what do you do? What you generally do, what you must not do, is you buy a tool, you buy a book, someone with a vantage point that says, do this. And if you do it, everything's going to go away. Everything's going to get better. And then what you do is you go out and you buy another tool. Instead of understanding that you have to integrate and understand what these things are doing by bringing deeper levels of education to the body. Had a gentleman the other week with a bad situation in the prostate and in infections that antibiotics and herbs and the rest of it wouldn't really fix. And he read a book on chlorine dioxide, and he was very committed to the notion that chlorine dioxide would fix the prostate problem. Chlorine dioxide is a very strong chemical solution, not quite pharmaceutical, not quite herbal. And he was very committed to it because he had had some return with it. But this is what I'm talking about. Inquiry into the holistic model at the failure of the allopathic model in the interest of fixing something that's not being fixed. And of course, is there any concept, okay, of drainage from the gland? Is there any concept of what factors are creating the infection? No, it's bust the infection and it dies. And that's as far as the mentality goes. When in fact, all the laws collectively and understanding them would lead one to understand that even if you break a biofilm, you have to remove it. Then you have to deal with the terrain that continues to promote the growth of the infection, and so on and so forth. And that's the difference between being holistic and just looking for the bomb and being holistic and understanding how you have to work with the mechanism of health. And this is what I'll forever be reminding you, because without it, you do not get success. Just as this individual was not having success. Yes, you get to first base. Yes, you're glad you didn't do the pharmaceutical drug. Yes, you're putting off the surgery. But in fact, you're on first base, and on first base, you will stay. So this is where I oblige you to begin to put education on your A list. Put it on the A list. It can't be, no, I don't have any time to understand it because I just want to do it. If you take that perception, you will go nowhere with it, relatively nowhere. It doesn't work that way. So understand what it means to have your bile flow. Understand what it means to sweat. Do you sweat? Had a young lady here a few weeks ago with psoriasis. And I asked her, do you sweat? And of course, the answer was no. Well, if you don't sweat, it's going to come out your head. The head is the place where the body excretes enormous amount of water-soluble poison. Well, we don't have to really understand psoriasis, and we don't have to understand the pathophysiology, but you could understand that in the checklist of health, in the natural laws of healing, if you don't sweat, Why would you even ask yourself? Why would you even be mildly surprised that your skin, the third kidney, is sending out through the skin what the kidney doesn't or what the sweat glands of the body won't? And this is my point once again. Dermatology said we don't have a solution for your psoriatic situation. Dermatology said here's a steroid. Dermatology said it's just the nature of your genetics. And nobody said do you sweat? Thus the checklist. Does your bile flow? Are you autonomically balanced? Are you precipitating too quickly? Are you not excreting, as in sweating? Are you able to sustain the shift from hot banya, hot infrared, into cold water? Can you sustain that transition? Can you handle the shift from hot to cold? Because if you can, rest assured, your glandular system can sustain. Your glandular system can fortify. It can drive a true detox. Let me repeat that. Can you go from a 180-degree sauna and profuse sweating into a pool of 50 to 60-degree water without shivering and shaking? Can you get to the point where the heat and the ice cold feel about the same? Do you understand still point? If you look at those pictures, 17 and 18, you see people doing that, cultures understanding this. Because if you have enough glandular strength to sustain that shift in temperature, you can rest assured your body can blow off the worst imaginable poisons through the lymphatic system, through the hair follicles, the sweat glands, before they do you damage. Again, a natural law of cure. Bring your body to where it sweats, and then bring your body to where you can sustain a rapid change in temperature. Biomechanics, picture 19. Tribal fusion belly dance. Excuse me. Look at picture 19. Tribal fusion belly dance. Now, this, what does this have to do with health? Well, go to the top. If you're driving and you can't really understand, just imagine a belly dancer. And I want you guys to go to picture and go to 4 minutes into the picture. Go to 4 minutes and just flick that on at 4 minutes. Just flip that on at 4 minutes and just watch this woman's abdominal cavity for a moment. We're at the top. This is Rachel Bryce. You went in at 4 minutes and you're just looking at this woman. If you're at your computer, move her abdominal cavity. Now look at that ability to move through the abdominal cavity between 4 minutes and 4 minutes and 20 seconds. And go through that whole thing, not now, but on your own later. And understand that Ida Rolf, brought to us this understanding that unless the parts of the spine are stacked in any given moment through the correct gravity lines, you're going to torque and transfer tension into the organ systems. If you look at picture 20, you're going to see that infamous Rolf diagram talking about a person with a bunch of blocks, as if each level of the body were a bunch of blocks, and those blocks are either aligned or misaligned. And if they're misaligned, what you have to understand is the organ you have your symptom with has been structurally, spatially distorted because those blocks of gravity are not aligned. That is why you have to isolate through the spine. Have you learned to isolate through individual segments of the spine? And that's what belly dancing is. Ideally, that's what Pilates is. Ideally, that's what yoga is. So let me ask you, in that you're compiling a list today, do you have relationship with this statement? Yes, we can say, can you shake your booty? Does the sacrum isolate from L5? Does the rib cage isolate from the pelvis? Does the head and neck isolate from the thoracic spine? Can you wiggle like a snake? Can you belly dance? Do you get the point? Is there something about you from the emotional structure of you that resists isolating through the spine? Is your emotional being so rigid that this is too foreign a concept? It's too large a concept. It's too intimidating a concept. Can you do anything simulating what you watch that belly dancer on YouTube do with the greatest of ease? Do you understand that whether it's yoga, qigong, tai chi, kung fu, Pilates, heller work, belly dancing, modern dancing, it doesn't matter. They're all saying the same thing. They're all saying that unless each and every vertebra can isolate, you're not going to have health. Because structure determines function. Anatomy determines physiology. An aberrant anatomy or aberrant structure determines aberrant physiology or pathology, which is disease. Look at the list we're combining. Look at the list we're compiling. Building garbage, cleaning garbage, balancing the nervous system, creating a relationship with adhesion, moving the bile, sweating as a means of moving the lymph, sweating into cold temperatures as a means of knowing that your endocrine system can support you, isolating different segments of the spine. Why, if you did all these things, here's another question you have to ask yourself. If being healthy is proportional to your creativity, your creative expression, and you've gotten sick because you've been creatively squashed, conceivably, as you heal and you liberate energy, do you have a place to put that energy creatively? Or is the frame of reference around your life? If you work at a desk and feel trapped and find yourself in middle age and sick, even if you did begin to lift yourself out of that into a surplus of energy, would you have anywhere to put it? Because you got to ask yourself that question. If you're sick, you've got to ask yourself, as I heal and I bring up my reserve of energy, do I have any place to put it? And if the answer to that is no, and if the answer to that is maybe, and if the answer to that is I haven't thought about it, you have to think about it. You have to have a place to put the creative flow you create. The tumor doesn't go away. The autoimmune disease doesn't cease. The symptom doesn't stop. The depression doesn't go anywhere. I need to stop my depression. I need to stop my anxiety. Do you have any place to put the energy that you'll create? Do you have any place to put that energy in terms of creative expression? No, I don't. I haven't thought about that. And that is why you fail. Are you getting your breath? I did the show last week. Getting your breath. Look at it another way. Put it on the list. Because if the energetic model, if your body hasn't taken itself to the place where you can move prana through the breath, there's no way you'll regulate the nervous system. And part and parcel to that is opening the space between the occiput C1 and C2. If you talk about isolation, can you talk about isolating that space between the occiput, the first and second cervical vertebra? Can you piece this together? If you took these 20 things I've mentioned today on the show and you paid yourself enough attention to these to successfully create relationship with them, you could get yourself out of anything. These are the basic natural laws of health. It isn't that much more complicated. But you can see there's a depth of yourself. There's an education you have to bring to it. Occiput, C1, C2. Look at picture 23, 24, 25, 26, 27. Five pictures. Focus in on picture 26. Those of you driving, we're showing you the back of someone's head and the deep muscles on the vertebra, the ones that are sitting on the vertebra. Those muscles, in fact, are thick and dense. The short neck muscles, the ones on the bones in the back of the head that control the ability of the occiput, first and second cervical vertebra to mobilize and move and pump the brainstem, control health. Is the blood too stagnant? If someone presses their finger into your body, do you feel like you're a bruise? Are you a walking bruise of stagnant blood? Or does that finger, that palpatory exam, drop into where the muscle meets the bone and you find nothing more than pleasure there? How deeply are you sleeping in the stages of sleep? Ending in deep REM, powerful active REM after deep reparative sleep. Are you sleeping straight? Add it to the list. If you take everything I've said today, create a checklist out of it, and spend the next year attuning yourself with gravity to all of the things I've mentioned, so you know you're in reality, you'll end up with prosperity. In reality, you will create your prosperity, not myopia. 714-850-1007, 714-850-1007. If you need counsel, call, make the appointment. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.